أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. We seek the protection of God from Shaitan, who has been expelled from God's kingdom of special grace and mercy because of his arrogance and his defiance. If we avoid these satanic habits of arrogance, whatever we know to be true, we submit. And if we avoid the satanic habit of defiance, whatever we know to be evil, we don't defiantly commit it. And if we have reliance on God, we shall be given the strength to be able to identify, to oppose, and to overcome the satanic temptations. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. We humbly turn to God and ask for His special grace and guidance, because He is the all-perfect being. Nobody can achieve any goodness or perfection until and unless Allah wills it so. And we turn to Him because He is Rahman, His mercy and His love and His care and His attention spans out to reach everything in the universe, brings it to life, sustains it, and enables it to develop and achieve its goal of perfection. And we turn to Him because He is Rahim, His extra love and grace and mercy and special reward is available both here in the dunya and in the hereafter, eternally, abundantly, to an extent which is unimaginable. It's exclusive, however, only for those who respond to Him, who believe in Him, and who submit to His will. Alhamdulillah. Wassalatu wassalam ala sayyidina wa nabiyyina Muhammad wa alihi at-tahirin. And we send our salutations and greetings on the Holy Prophet and on his holy progeny, who are the best guides for mankind till the end of time. Respected scholars, elders, brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. We assemble to commemorate the event of Karbala by the guidance of the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam. And this commemoration, from the Quranic perspective, must be meaningful, in that our approach should be reflective, in that we should try to seek and learn lessons to apply to our daily lives, and see how Imam alayhi salam implemented the teachings of the Quran in this movement. The process of weeping and grieving and mourning is extremely important. It's one of the most powerful ways to bond and to connect to the event. And there are stages of weeping, which I pointed out in the earlier session, that we begin from a sense of compassion. We go on to try to conform to the lifestyle of the holy ones, and beyond that, we wish to reform and purify ourselves and politically protest and proclaim our support for the cause of the Imam excuse me, and to prepare ourselves for that final confrontation between evil and justice, to establish globally the godly values, and gradually to get closer to God through the process of weeping. There's an interesting hadith regarding weeping, whereby Imam alayhi salam says that sometimes there are people who cannot cry tears. They may listen to the tragedy, but you don't see tears flowing. It doesn't necessarily mean that there is no faith. The process is described in the riwayat as the process of tabaki. Whosoever puts up an appearance, makes an appearance of weeping and crying, that is sufficient also for him to qualify to enter into Jannah. So the riwayat says, man baka aw abka aw tabaka فَلَهُ الْجَنَّةِ Whosoever weeps or makes others weep or makes an appearance of weeping and grieving and mourning, so he would qualify and he would deserve to go to Jannah. This is based on the riwayat which are narrated even from the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi. There are verses in the Quran which talk about the punishment in the fire of hell, and the Prophet would recite that, he would weep, and the listeners and the companions would weep. وَسِيقَ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا زُمَرًا, and those people who have received the message of truth and have understood it, and then they deliberately deny and refuse to accept, they shall be resurrected on the day of judgment. They shall be assembled in a group because their behavior and their response to the truth is the same. Zumar, they shall be in groups, and they shall be dragged forcibly toward the hellfire. Just like in the dunya, they reached a point in their lives where they were forcibly attracted to evil. Allah creates every human being in such a way that they naturally like what is good and naturally dislike what is evil. But if somebody deliberately ignores this God-given propensity for good and this God-given disgust for evil, you break it, you damage it, till you reach a point where you become enslaved to the evil. So whenever the evil temptation arises, the person is forced to go there, of course by his own evil choice. This enslavement to evil will manifest itself on the day of judgment in such a way that these people will be dragged forcibly to Jahannam. It's a terrible outcome for an individual who has the opportunity to gain access to Jannah and stages within Jannah. So the Prophet would weep, and the companions also would weep. So one youth stood up and said that the others wept, but I couldn't weep. However, I made an appearance of weeping. So the Prophet said, sallallahu alayhi wa alihi, مَنْ تَبَاكَى فَلَهُ الْجَنَّةِ Whosoever makes an appearance of weeping, there is Jannah for that person. Or take another example. The recitation of Surah Takathur. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم أَلْهَاكُمُ التَّكَاثُرُ حَتَّى زُرْتُمُ الْمَقَابِرُ The material life has preoccupied you to an extent that you forget the higher reality of the next life, till suddenly when your eyes close, the physical eyes close, and your spiritual eyes open, and you see the other world, that's when you realize, but it's too late. Again, this surah is a powerful reminder of the next life. The Holy Prophet said that whosoever listens to this surah, man baka, and then he weeps, falahul jannah. And then he repeated himself, man tabaka, falahul jannah. Whosoever weeps, there will be jannah. Whosoever makes an appearance of weeping, also will qualify to go to jannah. Why is that? Isn't that a pretension? Isn't that a false imitation? Isn't that a faking of an appearance? And therefore there is riya, and riya is shirk and batil and nullifies your act of ibadah. Well, no, the Prophet has sanctioned it. That means there is something positive in here. We need to discover that positive process. Basically, weeping has got three elements. There's something that motivates the weeping. There is the process of weeping. There is the purpose of weeping, the process of weeping, and then there's the product of weeping. The purpose of weeping, if it's for the sake of God, the reminder of the grandeur and the majesty of God arouses an element of awe and fear. And therefore, this purpose elicits a response, which is the tearing and the flow of tears. And then there's a product, and the product is a change in behavior, whereby the person now avoids that which is evil and prepares for the akhirah. In the case of the tragedy of Karbala, the purpose would be the reminder of the evil that was perpetrated against the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, the process, the tears, the product, the declaration of disgust against evil, and the declaration of support for the Ahlul Bayt. However, if a person experiences grief and sorrow, the purpose is there. The product also is there, the declaration of disgust against evil and support for the good ones, but the middle part is missing, the tears are missing. No problem. The Prophet says, "Man tabaka falahu al-jannah." The corollary of this argument would be, if a person has tears but the purpose is wrong, or the product is missing, there's no change in behavior, that those tears are the riya tears, or the incomplete tears, or the tears of munafiq. Because even the enemies of the Ahlul Bayt, when they saw the suffering, some of them cried. So some of us who may not experience tears should not feel guilty or disappointed. If the niyyah is there, if the change in behavior is there, you should be gratified and thankful. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's movement was entirely based on the teachings of the Quran. In fact, the movement begins with the recitation of the Quran. The riwayah says when he departed from Medina on his way to Mecca, he recited an ayah in resemblance of the departure and the migration of Prophet Musa alayhi salam. In Surah Qasas, the incident of Musa alayhi salam coming out of the palace and entering into town, and then coming across a Coptic from Fir'aun's family and a member of Bani Israel engaged in a physical conflict, and then this Shia of Bani Israel solicits and asks for help from Musa. And Musa, knowing the nature of Fir'aun, that they are oppressive and unjust, and knowing that Bani Israel are enslaved and oppressed, therefore they need to be supported against injustice, he offers assistance, and he lands a punch on the Coptic, and the Coptic collapses and dies immediately. The Quran narrates this incident in Surah Qasas. Musa alayhi salam did not intend to kill. The murder weapon wasn't there. The murder intent wasn't there. It was an accidental event that happened. Immediately Musa alayhi salam asks for forgiveness, and Allah does not condemn him. Musa, you are a dangerous man. You can kill, you know. No, Musa alayhi salam's request for forgiveness is granted. It was an accident. But Musa realized one thing. Musa realized that he's a young man, a strong man, such that a single punch can knock down a person. A strong man who then, when he migrates from Misr, and after a period of travel in the desert, arrives in Madian, where Prophet Shu'aib was there, and sees the daughters of Prophet Shu'aib standing near the well, waiting for their turn to take water to feed the sheep. Musa alayhi salam goes and offers assistance to them. He goes to the well, and he tells the other men, the other shepherd, who are denying access to the women, "Let's make a deal. I will draw the water, once for you and once for them. The water which had to be drawn by several men could be done single-handedly by Musa. He was a strong man. And in recognition of this great ni'mah that Allah has granted him, Surah Qasas quotes Musa alayhi salam that, "O Lord, now that I've realized that I have great potential, I pray to you that I never use this skill and talent and potential that you have granted me to serve the evil powers." Qala, Surah number 28. Qala Rabbi, bima an'amta, for the ni'mah that you have given me, فَلَنْ أَكُونَ ظَهِيرًا لِلْمُجْرِمِينَ, let me never ever be a support to the evil ones. His migration from Misr was precisely to escape the evil ones. When he left, فَخَرَجَ مِنْهَا, ayah number 21, and Musa alayhi salam departed, فَخَرَجَ مِنْهَا خَائِفًا يَتَرَقَّبْ قَالَ رَبِّ نَجِّنِي min al-qawmi al-zalimin. O Lord, what I have done was not evil, it was accidental. But they will hunt me down, and because of their evil system, they will accuse me wrongly, unjustly, that in my defense of the oppressed, I've committed a crime. In order to save my life, I've come here to save this community, to reform the people, to liberate them from the oppressors. But this is not the right time. If I get arrested now, that grand goal and purpose will be defeated. So Musa escapes to protect his life. O Lord, save me and protect me from these evil people. The same sentiment and the motive was expressed by Imam Hussein alayhi salam as he left Medina. Similarly, once he arrives in Mecca, he recites an ayah similar to the ayah which is quoted about Musa alayhi salam when he arrives in Mecca. In the wasiyah that he leaves behind, he quotes an ayah from the Quran to Muhammad ibn Hanafiyyah. Right up till the time when he arrives in Karbala, in the khutbah that he gives in Karbala. In fact, even after his shahada, the holy head on the spear recites the Quran. And one of the verses is from Surah Kahf. So the important lesson is the whole movement from the beginning throughout till the end, in fact even after martyrdom, was all based on the Quran and the Quranic teachings. The most fundamental lesson at this initial stage of the movement that we can learn of how Imam Hussein alayhi salam was implementing the teachings of the Quran was the issue of migration from a society or a community that is dominated by evil, where the truth seekers will not be allowed to seek the truth, or once they find it, it will be distorted before it can be presented to them, or after it is presented to them, that they're not allowed to practice that truth or defend the truth. In such a situation, hijrah and migration becomes imperative, incumbent. And this is what Imam Hussein alayhi salam did. It's an interesting principle which was applied by the prophets in the past, by the Holy Prophet himself and by the Imams. Observe. In fact, the Quran even praises those people who were not prophets but who applied the principle of migration. It praises them. A whole surah is named after them, Surah Kahf. The crux of the story of Kahf is precisely migration. Notice how the incident is described. Chapter 18, verse number 9. أَمْ حَسِبْتَ أَنَّ أَصْحَابَ الْكَهْفِ وَالرَّقِيمِ كَانُوا مِنْ آيَاتِنَا عَجَبًا. That's the introduction. Well, what is the crux of the story before the details are mentioned? إِذْ آوَى الْفِتْيَةُ إِلَى الْكَهْفِ. Remember the time when the young men took refuge in the cave. فَقَالُوا رَبَّنَا
آتنا من لدنك رحمة وهيئ لنا من أمرنا رشدا.
For the truth seekers, for those who believe in the one true God, and therefore they reject any power other than God, any power that invites them to lead a lifestyle which is against the dictates of the true Lord of the universe, for such people, if they are forced to make a choice, if they are forced to recant their faith, which is the true faith, and they are forced to accept the evil lifestyle, then for them, life in the city is miserable, life in the desert becomes preferable. No, life inside a dark cave becomes preferable. Migration. Yusuf, alayhi salam, he was inside the palace with all the luxuries of the palace, but with the evil temptations. And he was given a choice. Either you succumb, or I'm going to make sure you go to prison, Zalikha says. And Yusuf says, Rabbi as-sijni ahabbu ilayya mimma yad'unani ilayh. Oh Lord, the prison is better than the palace. The Ashabul Kahf said the cave is better than the city. The principle of migration, a fundamental principle. But before I elaborate on that, it's important for us to realize what are the principles of a community which is the ideal city or town or community which the Quran advocates. A beautiful example of how to build a city according to the Quranic divine prophetic model is given by Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam. Prophet Ibrahim migrated from Babylon after confronting Nimrud, and he goes to Sham, and then from Sham he migrates to Mecca. Mecca is a desolate, barren desert, but he builds a community from scratch. Notice what are the pillars of that community. Pillar number one, a center of worship. The first thing he does is construct the Kaaba. Pillar number two, O Lord, make this city a secure and safe place. رَبِّ جَعَلْ هَذَا بَلَدًا آمِنًا. Security. Number three, prosperity, economic prosperity. وَرْزُقْ أَهْلَهُ مِنَ الثَّمَرَاتِ. This is there in Surah Baqarah, chapter 2, ayah 124 onwards. So you start with a center of spirituality, a common collective worship center. Number two is security. Number three is economic prosperity. Number four, رَبَّنَا وَجْعَلْنَا مُسْلِمَيْنِ لَكْ وَمِنْ ذُرِّيَّتِنَا. Alright, so now we've got all the necessary components of a vibrant, successful community. But then what about the next generation, the posterity? Oh Lord, make us submit to your will, and also the next generation. وَمِنْ ذُرِّيَّتِنَا. And finally, number five. Oh Lord, I'm here, I'm very old now, I'm going to leave very soon, but there should be somebody who should ensure the guidance of this community. So prayer for the future leader. رَبَّنَا وَبْعَثْ فِيهِمْ رَسُولًا مِنْهُمْ يَتْلُوا عَلَيْهِمْ آيَاتِكَ وَيُعَلِّمُهُمُ الْكِتَابَ وَالْحِكْمَةَ وَيُزَكِّيهِمْ إِنَّكَ أَنْتَ الْعَزِيزُ الْحَكِيمُ. Raise amongst them a messenger from amongst themselves, a member of their own community, who shall inform them of what is the divine law, who shall explain to them and implement those teachings, and also expound the deeper wisdom behind the laws. وَيُزَكِّيهِمْ, and also edify and reform them. إِنَّكَ أَنْتَ الْعَزِيزُ. You are the majestic one. Whatever your laws are,
they are enforceable, and if somebody breaks them, then there's always the punishment to ensure discipline. Al-Hakim, but your laws are all based on wisdom. So notice a society or community which is worthy of living in is a society where, first of all, there is a center of worship, collective worship, exemplified by the Kaaba and everywhere else, anything connected to the Kaaba, and then security, and then economic prosperity, and then preparation of the next generation, the posterity, and finally, to make sure that the truth that has been found on an initial basis now, this then grows as the society grows, as the problems expand, as the challenges diversify, there are enough laws, there is enough guidance to be able to meet and to address all those problems that this community will face in the future. To have a Kaaba and not to have a leader is to have a center which started with Tawheed but ends up with Shirk. The Kaaba had idols at one time in its history because there was no right leader. To have a center and not to have a spiritual guide, a guide who will take the community and the society and the nation toward God based on godly guidance, is to have a Kaaba, the center of Tawheed with idols. And that's where we realize the importance of the movement by Imam Hussein alayhi salam. The reason of his migration was principally Masjid al-Nabi is there, yes. The Prophet is the center of attraction, yes. But then the problem is this community and this society of Medina, in fact the Islamic Empire, is now being ruled by a person who has no respect for divine laws. The same sentiment we find in the case of Prophet Ibrahim. In Surah Ankabut, chapter 29, ayah number 16 onwards, the story of the Hijrah by Prophet Ibrahim is discussed. That Prophet Ibrahim preached to his community very few converts, and finally he makes a decision to migrate. Ayah number 16 onwards. Wa Ibrahim idh qala li qawmihi u'budu Allah wattaquhu dhalikum khayrun lakum in kuntum ta'lamun. And remember the time when Ibrahim said to his people, you must worship the one true Lord. And this Prophet Ibrahim story appears in Surah Ankabut after that of Prophet Nuh. Prophet Nuh is deemed to be the second Adam after the global floods which destroyed mankind, which was rebellious and defiant. A new generation came with the guidance of Prophet Nuh. After Prophet Nuh, the next Ulul Azm Prophet was Ibrahim alayhi salam. The surah discusses Prophet Ibrahim's preaching till it reaches ayah number 25, where Ibrahim alayhi salam now says, innamattakhadhtum min dunillahi awthana. You have rejected the true God. You have taken up idols. Whenever we turn to any source of law other than God, in one sense, this is shirk. Shirk is not only to bow down before an idol, to expect anything from other than God, to hope in anyone other than God, to fear somebody other than God more than God, to rely on somebody else more than God, to forget God and believe godly powers in other entities. These are all forms of shirk. Ibrahim alayhi salam condemns his people, اتخذتم من دون الله أوثانا, مَوَدَّةَ بَيْنِكُمْ فِي الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا. And you have structured your whole life based on these laws that have been made by yourselves for your own benefit. There may be societies which are advanced technologically. They've advanced themselves, scientific discoveries. They know some of the laws that Allah has put in place to govern the universe. They design technologies to exploit these scientific discoveries. And they're put to benefit for that community. This is exactly what Prophet Ibrahim is describing that was happening in that shirk society. But the problem is, ثُمَّ يَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ يَكْفُرُ بَعْضُكُمْ بِبَعْضٍ وَيَلْعَنُ بَعْضُكُمْ بَعْضًا وَمَأْوَاكُمُ النَّارِ وَمَا لَكُمْ مِنْ نَاصِرِينَ. However, the bond and the connection between you is purely physical and material. It's selfish, it's individualistic. It's only a matter of mutual agreement. So long as the law cannot catch me and cannot apprehend me and cannot monitor me and I can escape the law, to that extent I will break the law. So it's not out of fear of something which is of a higher principle, a moral virtue, a divine principle, that the society becomes good. The society is individualistic and refuses to break the law to the extent that they fear man-made law. But on the day of judgment, when the truth will come out, when the true feelings that individual has for each other, they will express themselves, that's when each one will curse the other. فَآمَنَ لَهُ لُوطٌ. Unfortunately, in that community, there were very few believers. One of them was his nephew, Lut, Ibrahim's nephew. وَقَالَ إِنِّي مُهَاجِرٌ إِلَى رَبِّي إِنَّهُ هُوَ الْحَزِيزُ الْحَكِيمُ. I'm migrating. Where am I going? Ibrahim says, I'm migrating from this society, which is full of shirk. Where do I go? I don't know. I haven't determined the place. But I am migrating to my Lord. That means wherever I can practice the godly lifestyle. Doesn't matter where. The principle of hijrah, therefore, as shown in the story of Kahf, Ashabul Kahf, or that of the other prophets, or that of the last prophet, sallallahu alaihi wa alayhi, is that migration should be to please God to wherever it becomes possible to practice the law of God. In fact, therefore, if somebody does not migrate when it is incumbent to migrate, then they're going to be condemned. In Surah Nisa, chapter 4, ayah number 96, Allah describes a group of people who should have migrated, but they refused to migrate. The angels in Barzakh question them. What is the reason you refuse to obey the command of God and to live a godly lifestyle? الَّذِينَ تَوَفَّاهُمُ الْمَلَائِكَةِ قَالُوا فِيمَا كُنْتُمْ. When these people shall be about to die, the angels come to extract their souls. If they have lived in a society where they knew the truth, yet they did not practice the truth, and if they died in that state, then they shall be culpable. It is said that in Mecca, there were some Muslims. The Prophet migrated, many Muslims migrated. But these few Muslims refused to migrate. They said, well, our children are here, our families are here, we've got relatives here, we've got our own livelihood here, we've got our business here, we're secure. Alright, the society is dominant with evil culture and corruption and kufr and shirk. But then we've got no choice. Unfortunately, there came a time in the second year of Hijrah when the mushrikeen were planning the battle of Badr. These Muslims were forced to join the battle on the side of the mushrikeen to fight against the Muslims. The Quran says such Muslims on the day of judgment, in Barzakh they'll be questioned. ظَالِمِي أَنفُسِهِمْ You have done dhulm to your nafs. You knew the truth, yet you refused to detach yourself from your business, from your relatives, from your friends, from your hometown to go and join the Prophet for the sake of God. Fima kuntum, what is your excuse? We know the lifestyle that you have led, the angels would say. But they would say, kunna mustada'afina fil ard. You know, the mushrikeen, they forced us. They forced us to disobey, not to obey the Prophet and God. They forced us, in fact, they forced us to disbelieve, to show our disbelief. The angels would reply. The angel said, sorry, this excuse of yours is not acceptable. قَالُوا أَلَمْ تَكُنْ أَرْضُ اللَّهِ وَاسِعًا. Was not the earth of God vast enough and spacious and wide enough for you to migrate? فَتُهَاجِرُوا فِيهَا. Some of the Muslims migrated to Habasha, some of the Muslims migrated to Medina. Why did you not migrate? Whenever there is a possibility in an evil society to resist, the first duty definitely is resistance. If resistance fails, assimilation is not acceptable. In Surah Muddathir, Allah condemns those people who in the fire of hell will be asked, what led you to the fire of hell? Anil Mujrimeen, chapter 74, ayah 47 onwards. مَا سَلَكَكُمْ فِي سَقَرْ. What has led you to the depths of the fire of hell? So these evil doers shall explain. قَالُوا لَمْ نَكُوا مِنَ الْمُصَلِّينَ. We were not amongst those who prayed regularly. وَلَمْ نَكُوا نُطْعِمُ الْمِسْكِينَ. We had no compassion for the needy. It doesn't matter if he's a Muslim or not. Even non-Muslim. So long as they're needy, they're poor, they're weak, they deserve to be helped. It's the duty, the humanitarian duty of a Muslim to help. You don't, you go to the fire of hell. These people are not being condemned because they didn't pay zakat, which is wajib. We did not feed the needy. Number two. Number three. وَكُنَّا نَخُوضُ مَعَ الْخَائِضِينَ. There were evildoers, there were sinners, there was the wine drinking, the clubbing party, the peer pressure, the social groups, the sinful behavior. Well, everybody was doing it and we joined them. كُنَّا نَخُوضُ مَعَ الْخَائِضِينَ. Number three. Number four. وَكُنَّا نُكَذِّبْ بِيَوْمِ الدِّينَ. When we were being warned, hey listen, there's a consequence of what you're doing. You may not know all the details, or even the best of the scientists don't know all the details. They don't even know everything about the universe. And even their theories are being overturned all the time. It was a beautiful graduation lecture given by one of the deans of college. He says, congratulations, you've completed 5 years of your study. Now you're qualified medical doctors, going out to the community to serve humanity. But I need to issue a warning. 50% of the stuff that we have taught you, unfortunately, over the time period that we taught you, new discoveries have shown that 50% is now not totally correct and true. But that's the good news. The bad news is we don't know which 50% that we taught you is the... Assuming that this is just a joke, but the crux and the essence of the scientific endeavor is precisely this. It's an ever-growing, ever-progressing empirical study based on hypothesis formation whereby any new discovery can discredit and disqualify a previous theory. And that's the very nature of the scientific endeavor. When we were being warned that there are higher realities, we refused to accept. We ignored. We neglected. We denied the truth. Number four. حَتَّى أَتَانَا الْيَقِينَ. Till finally, death overtook us. It was just too late. We realized just too late. So, faced with evil in a society, the choice is either resist. If you don't and you succumb, you're culpable, you're responsible. Meaning that the Quran considers the human being strong enough, intelligent enough to be able to seek the truth, to find it, to accept it, to live by it, to resist against evil. If no, he is punishable. It is not fair for God, the All-Wise One, to punish a person who could not defend himself or herself. The fact that they are punishable, according to the Quran, means that everyone has the means. There is an exemption, yes. Surah Nisa, ayah number 98, then says, إِلَّا الْمُسْتَضَعْفِينَ مِنَ الرِّجَالِ وَالنِّسَاءِ وَالْوِلْدَانِ, except for the elderly, except for the women, except for the children. Intellectually, they're not advanced, so maybe they haven't sought their seeking of the truth has not been complete. Or maybe the truth wasn't totally presented to them. It was too twisted. It was distorted. Or no, maybe they did discover the truth, but they were weak enough to change. Or no, to escape from that society. They're an exemption. They're an exception. But even them, Allah will definitely forgive them. No. Allah perhaps will forgive them. Amazing, amazing. Even for such people, the promise of pardon and forgiveness is not definite. It's so serious a crime to continue to accept evil in a society and to be silent and not to resist. And therefore, this movement of Imam Hussein alayhi salam from the Quranic perspective becomes a very important movement. Incidentally, hijrah and migration doesn't only mean leaving a city and migrating to another city. It can mean leaving a neighborhood and going to another one, a school to another place, an institution or place of work to another place, a family circle, a friend circle, any situation where you do not get the opportunity to practice what you know to be true, and you have to be complacent and silent and supportive of evil, therefore is a situation where hijrah, small hijrah, becomes wajib. Man farra, the Prophet says, bidinihi min ardin ila ardin, whosoever flees and escapes for the sake of the truth from one land to another, wa in kana shibran, even if the land that you traverse is a few feet only, wajab lahu al-jannah. For that hijrah, there is jannah. It's not a question of migrating from one city to another. It's any and every situation where God's law is violated, you can resist, you must. If you can't, you should not succumb. Make sure you move out from that situation. That's the hijrah. And therefore, in fact, the riwayah continues. Not only istawjab al-jannah, wa kana rafiq Ibrahim wa Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi. Such a person has the spirit of the Prophet and the spirit of Prophet Ibrahim, and therefore he shall be in the company of the Prophet and Prophet Ibrahim, meaning that physically he is alive today. Were he to be alive at the time of the Holy Prophet or Prophet Ibrahim, he would have done just like what those prophets did. And therefore he gets that reward. In fact, in Surah Anfal, those people who can migrate and don't migrate are condemned that they are not your friends. Cut off your relationship with them. Surah Anfal is chapter 8, ayah number 72 onwards. Allah says, إِنَّ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَهَاجَرُوا وَجَاهَدُوا بِأَمْوَالِهِمْ وَأَنفُسِهِمْ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ وَالَّذِينَ آوَوا وَنَصَرُوا أُولَٰئِكَ بَعْضُهُمْ أَوْلِيَاءُ بَعْضُ. You know, how should a community be built on wilaya? the bond of relationship where I am responsible for the other person. I must give help or I must solicit and seek help. I must be a protector and a guardian of the other members of that community. If there is Iman 1, there's Hijrah 2, there's Jihad 3, there's support of Iman and Hijrah 4 and 5. If these five principles are there, that is the community where wilayah should be practiced. وَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَلَمْ يُهَاجِرُوا. As for those who claim to be believers, but they don't make the hijrah, then مَا لَكُم مِّن وَلَايَتِهِم مِّن شَيْءٍ. They have no walayah with you. You are not duty bound now to support them or to seek support from them. They're not true believers. حَتَّى يُهَاجِرُوا. Till they make that hijrah. Amazing. After Iman, forget jihad. Before jihad, hijrah is the most important identifying mark of a mu'min. No hijrah, you're not a true mu'min. وَإِنِ اسْتَنْصَرُوكُمْ فِي الدِّينِ فَعَلَيْكُمُ النَّصْرُ إِلَّا عَلَىٰ قَوْمٍ بَيْنَكُمْ وَبَيْنَهُمْ مِيثَاقًا. However, if they're caught in a situation where they're being oppressed and they seek help from you, so and you can help them, you must help them. Unless there's a treaty whose obligations and whose conditions bind you not to take action against that community. In that case, you're allowed to not give help. وَاللَّهُ بِمَا تَعْمَلُونَ بَصِيرٌ. The next ayah warns, إِلَّا تَفَعَلُوهُ تَكُنْ فِتْنَةٌ فِي الْأَرْضِ وَفَسَادٌ كَبِيرٌ. Should you fail to give that support, then there will be fitna and there will be fasad. This is the precise fitna and the fasad which we find in the time of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, because the Muslims did not act on this ayah the way Imam Hussein alayhi salam did. So observe now how Imam Hussein alayhi salam responds to this duty. But before I go to the discussion about Imam Hussein alayhi salam's departing process and the verses of the Quran that apply to that situation, one final reminder. In Surah Ankabut, those Muslims who are hesitant, what's going to happen to our livelihood? It's a dangerous trip. Security is a problem. Number two, economic prosperity is a problem. It seems the Quran is very good in human psychology. It identifies the basic obstacles why people refuse to make hijrah. Ankabut was revealed towards the end of the period of the Prophet's stay in Mecca. Just the time ripe for migration. People are hesitant. Two big problems. One is rizq. The other one is fear of death. The Quran responds to both of them. Surah Ankabut, chapter 29, Ayah number 56. Ya ibadi alladhina amanu inna ardi wasi'a fa iyyaya fa'buduni. I've created you to worship me and me alone. Serve me and me alone, God says. And my land is wide. If you can't do it in one part of the world, go to another part of the world. But you must worship me and me alone. Oh, but it's dangerous. كُلُّ نَفْسٍ ذَائِقَةُ الْمَوْتِ ثُمَّ إِلَيْنَا تُرْجَعُونَ. Everyone is going to taste death. Death is inescapable. What you will be asked is, did you perform your duty? In Surah Ahzab, Allah describes the munafiqeen that they refused to join the Prophet in the battle because they were afraid of death. And Allah says, death is in Allah's hands, it's not in your hands. If you perform your duty, you may go to the battlefield. You may be right in the center, nearest to the enemy. But if Allah has not decreed death for you, you'll come back safe and sound and alive. You stay back home thinking that you're going to be secure. If Allah has decreed death for you, you're going to escape it. You'll die on your comfortable bed. And the warrior is going to come back safe and sound. Death is not in your hands. كل نفس ذائقة الموت. What's your fear? Your fear is, am I going to disobey God? Am I going to be punishable before God? That should be your fear.
الَّذِينَ صَبَرُوا وَعَلَىٰ رَبِّهِمْ يَتَوَكَّلُونَ.
Be firm, be determined, be patient, be persevering. Rely on God. Go ahead and perform your duty. Hey, but if I'm going to change from this place to another place, my livelihood is not secure.
So Allah responds to this second obstacle. وَكَأَيِّن مِّن دَابَّةٍ لَا تَحْمِلُ رِزْقَهَا.
Human being, wake up. Are you alone in this world who is being provided for by God? How many animals are there? Oh, so many animals. No, all the animals. The creepers and the crawlers and the walkers. All types of animals. All of them.
How many of them carry their own provision?
Muhammad Asad has translated this beautifully. He says, how many of these animals have simply no thought of their own sustenance? And yet they are alive.
Man, even the snake and the scorpion and the spider who can kill you is being provided by God. You are lesser than a scorpion or a spider or a snake? For God's sake, wake up.
Hijrah is your duty in a particular society, in a particular situation.
Depend on God and take your step. Rely on Him and He's going to provide you, in as much as He provides for all the animals.
وَكَأَيِّن مِّن دَابَّةٍ لَا تَحْمِلُ رِزْقَهَا.
It's either too weak to fend for itself, or it's too weak to store up its provisions for the morrow, and Allah provides.
اللَّهُ يَرْزُقُهَا وَإِيَّاكُمْ.
Allah will feed the animal and will feed you.
Why?
Well, because the reason is إِنَّ اللَّهَ بِكُلِّ شَيْءٍ عَلِيمٍ.
Allah knows everything. Allah knows the needs of every creature. Allah is aware how much to give, to whom, when to give, how to give, and why to give.
If you trust God, there is no question in anybody's mind, therefore, that should hijrah become necessary, rizq should not be a worry.
The next ayah in the same surah, Surah An-Kabut, then gives the reason.
وَلَئِنْ سَأَلْتَهُمْ مَنْ خَلَقَ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضَ وَسَخَّرَ الشَّمْسَ وَالْقَمَرَ لَيَقُولُنَّ اللَّهِ فَأَنَّا يُؤْفَكُونَ.
اللَّهُ يَبْسُطُ الرِّزْقَ لِمَنْ يَشَاءُ مِنْ عِبَادِهِ وَيَقْدِرُ لَهُ إِنَّ اللَّهَ بِكُلِّ شَيْءٍ عَلِيمٌ.
O Prophet, if you were to ask them, who is the one who has created the heavens and the earth? Who is the one who has set up the sun and the moon? Who is the one who has set up this whole system, designed in a beautiful way? And all of them will say, yes, Allah has done it.
Well, if that's the case, how come they're turning away from Him?
Oh, wait a minute. You have placed so much trust in this man-made economic system that you're forgetting the actual provider is somebody else. You're now afraid within this web which has been spun, the spider's web, that in this web, if I'm going to move from one thread to another thread, I'm going to be trapped further.
What you don't realize is all a web.
Against God's power, God's knowledge, God's wisdom, God's generosity, God's grace, this whole economic system is just a web. A spider's web at that.
You want proof for that? Well, look at the design of the system.
The fact that up until now, scientists have yet failed to explain the appearance of life on the earth.
It's just too many factors that have to be in place in the right time, in the right proportion, in the right relationship for it to be possible just by chance.
The factors necessary for life to develop on the earth, the distance of the earth from the sun, the speed of rotation of the earth on its axis, the mixture of gases in the atmosphere, the laws of physics.
No, the laws that run the electron, the nucleus right at the micro level, the strength of the forces at the nuclear level, the magnetic force, the nuclear force, the electrical force, which is something 10 to the power of minus, I don't know what. That degree of precision and accuracy, should it be a little more? Should it be a little less? And life won't be possible. And everything is there just in the right place. We cannot be explained by chance. If it's not there by chance, therefore it's there by design. If it's there by design, definitely there must be a designer. We call it Allah. You may call it whatever you want. So the system exists, and there is a power greater than what we know, our human power. Allahu yabsutu rizqa. And therefore believe in Him. He's the one who provides. He's the one who brought you to life. He's the one who takes life away from you, and between your beginning and your death, He's the one who provides. Your duty, therefore, our duty, therefore, is to submit to this great power, and should it become necessary, make hijrah. Look at this defense of the principle of hijrah now as applied by Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He leaves the palace of the governor, Walid bin Utbah bin Abi Sufyan. Muhammad ibn al-Hanafiyya, his stepbrother, comes to visit him. And Ibn Hanafiyya says, Ya Akhi, my dear brother, أنت أحب الخلق إلي وأعزهم علي. You're the closest person alive to me. You're very dear to me. لست والله أدخر عن النصيحة لأحد من الخلق. By nature, I'm a good-hearted person, Ibn al-Hanafiyya says. I always keep the welfare of people at heart. I wish to advise you. I see something dangerous happening in your life. لَيْسَ أَحَدْ أَحَقْ بِهَا مِنْكَ. At this stage, I feel you are the most deserving to be given wise counsel and advice. لِأَنَّكَ مِزَاجُ مَائِي وَنَفْسِي وَرُوحِي وَبَصَرِي. I consider you as part of me. Your spirit is my spirit. Your nafs is my nafs. Your body is my body. I'm the closest to you. I cannot therefore tolerate the pain that you suffer and the danger that you're exposing yourself to. I wish to give you some advice. And besides, furthermore, besides all that, أنت كبير أهل بيتي. You are the eldest and you're the leader in the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam right now. وَمَنْ وَجَبَتْ طَاعَتُهُ فِي عُنُقِي. And you're the one whom I must obey at this time. You're my imam, in other words, Ibn al-Hanafiyya says. لِأَنَّ اللَّهَ قَدْ شَرَّفَكَ. Allah has elevated you. وَجَعَلَكَ مِنْ سَادَاتِ أَهْلِ الْجَنَّةِ. I testify and I accept that you are the leader of the youth in paradise. And therefore I submit myself to you. But then I wish to advise you. I wish to advise you, you must make sure, protect yourself from Yazid. This step that you're planning to take, you are exposing yourself to the danger of Yazid. Implying that try to compromise this confrontational stance that you are taking against Yazid, and therefore now you're forced to make migration and hijrah, this is not in your interest. Look at Imam's answer. So Imam says, Ya Akhi, so ila ayna adhab? So what would you advise me? Where do I go? So Ibn al-Hanafiyya says, you can proceed to Mecca if you find Mecca secure enough, good enough. But otherwise, you may consider Yemen. Yemen, innahum ansaru jaddika wa abik. Yemen has supporters. They supported your grandfather, the Holy Prophet. They supported your father, Ali ibn Abi Talib. Wa innahum arafu nasi wa araqquhum quluban. And they're good-hearted people. They're helpful people, people of Yemen. Wa awsa'u biladan. And it's a wide place. Even if you don't find supporters in one area, you can always settle down in other parts of Yemen. It's an ideal place to go to if Mecca isn't suitable for you. And if Yemen doesn't turn out to be a good place for you, then I would advise you, بِالرِّمَالِ وَالْجِبَالِ وَجُزْتَ مِنْ بَلَدٍ إِلَى بَلَدٍ. Otherwise, you may go out to the desert or to the mountainous regions, or keep on migrating from city to city. حتى تنظر ما يؤول إليه أمر الناس. And then let's see how people respond to Yazid. Should the time be ripe, then maybe you can come back and take up the leadership position. حتى يحكم الله بيننا وبين القوم الفاسقين. This terminology, these wordings are exactly the wordings that appear in the Quran. Whenever the confrontation between the prophets and the evil one reaches a point where they have presented their argument, they have explained their position, there is no response, there is rejection, there is opposition. In fact, there is now actively an effort to arrest and to eliminate the Prophet and the followers of the Prophet. That's the last dua they make. فَاصْبِرُوا حَتَّى يَحْكُمَ اللَّهُ وَاللَّهُ خَيْرُ الْحَاكِمِينَ. Now, I know what my duty is. I trust my affair to God. He will show me what's the best way, but I am not going to surrender to evil. Wallahu khairul hakimin. Allah is the best of the judges. He will judge me on the day of judgment based on my decision to obey Him and Him alone. Imam Hussein alayhi salam, tells Ibn al-Hanafiyya, Ya akhi, law kuntu fi batni sahratin lastakhrajuni. Ibn al-Hanafiyya, you don't seem to realize, even if I were to hide myself inside under a rock, that's just a metaphor, I can't escape anywhere. They're going to hunt me down, they're going to extract me, they're going to arrest me, and they're going to kill me. لَوْ لَمْ يَكُنْ فِي الدُّنْيَا مَلْجَأً وَلَا مَأْوَى لَمَا بَايَعْتُ يَزِيدٍ. Ibn al-Hanafiyya, know this much. There is nowhere I can go, but they will hunt me down. But I don't care, wherever I go, even if they're going to hunt me down, there is no way I am going to compromise with this man. That's my last stance. Ibn al-Hanafiyya realized he couldn't change Imam's mind. Nobody came to Imam that could change his mind. Ibn Abbas came to him, Ibn al-Hanafiyya. The other sons of Imam Ali, stepbrothers of Imam Hussein, came to him. Salama, she came to him. His paternal aunt, Imam Ali's sister, Hani, she also came to him. When Imam Hussein sees her, he is shocked. My dear aunt, you in this health, in this state of health, you have come to see me. And she says, I hear you are departing, and this is dangerous for you. We cannot afford to miss you. We know you are exposing yourself to danger. To all these people, be they intelligent people, be they ordinary people, be they leadership positions, be they family members, be the ladies of the Bani Hashim who came and pleaded and cried and wept before him. To all of them, he could not be moved by emotions. He could not be moved by any intellectual appeal. He had made a decision. A decision which he saw, which others were failing to see, unfortunately. Literally, there's darkness. There's darkness. People don't see the future, what's happening. You need the insight to know the end result of acquiescing, of surrendering, of keeping silent to this man. Bani Umayyah had reached a point where they were so arrogant, they thought they could get away. Incidentally, it's not Imam Hussein alayhi salam alone who was against Yazid. Yazid had many opponents. Muawiyah was trying to impose Yazid despite the opponents. Muawiyah used money to buy off his opponents. Some kept silent. Muawiyah used the threat of force, and he got some people killed and eliminated, those who opposed Yazid. Finally, it was these few people who remained, whom I mentioned yesterday. Abdullah bin Umar, given money, he kept silent. Abdullah bin Zubair, resistant, escaped, hid himself. The only person who came out in the open did not hide himself, Imam Hussein alayhi salam. But he openly declared, Bani Umayyah never thought that if they confronted Imam Hussein, that it would be the beginning of their downfall. Imam Hussein alayhi salam could see that future. Imam Hussein alayhi salam was confident that for the sake of God, there is no way to compromise or to surrender. Finally, Salama, when she meets Imam, she tells him that you will create a lot of pain and anguish and sadness in our hearts if you leave Medina. And I've heard your grandfather say, يقتل ولدي الحسين بأرض العراق في أرض يقال لها كربلاء. I can now remember your grandfather saying that my son Hussein, when he proceeds to Iraq, he shall be killed there in a land known as Karbala. So Imam Hussein alayhi salam tells Umm Salama, Ya Ummah, my dear mother, Ana wallahi a'lamu dhalik. I swear, I what you know, I also know. The Prophet also told me, Anni maqtulun la mahala. I know the consequence of this is I will be killed. But the problem is, Umm Salama, Ya Ummah, in lam akhruj ila al-Iraqi yaqtulunani. Even if I don't go to Iraq, they will hunt me down and they will kill me. And قد شاء الله عز وجل أن يراني مقتولا مذبوحا ظلما وعدوانا. It's the will of God. The will of God is when you confront evil and you don't compromise, but for the sake of truth, you should be killed. I am ready to accept that fate for the sake of God. I know what's going to happen. I'm going to be butchered. I'm going to be slaughtered. My children are going to be taken captives. My family members, they're going to be paraded. أطفالي مذبوحين مأسورين مقيدين يستغيثون. They will cry out for help. فلا يجدون ناصرا ولا معينا. Nobody will be there to help. These will be all Muslims there. Nobody will there will come and offer assistance. I know what's going to happen. Wallahi أعرف اليوم. I also know the day I will be killed. من يقتلني? Who will kill me? البقعة التي أقتل فيها. من يقتل من أهل بيتي وقرابتي وشيعتي. I also know who will be killed from my family members, from my followers. Salama, my dear mother, how can I convince you? This is an unavoidable decision, but for the sake of emotions, I'm not going to change my mind. Why don't you have a look? And he shows her Karbala. This is the place it's going to happen. This is the place I'm going to be buried. This is the place I'm going to be killed. These are the places where my family members are going to fall. Salama realizes this man is determined, like the flesh of the Prophet, to stand up for the cause of truth. And she cries, فبكت أم سلمة بكاء شديدة وسلمت أمره إلى الله. And she cried and she wept intensely and submitted herself and surrendered to the fate of the confrontation of truth against evil. Assalamu alayk ya Aba Abdullah wa ala al-arwah allati halat bi fina'ik wa anakhat bi rahlik. Alaykum minna jami'an salamullah abadan ma baqina wa baqiya al-laylu wa al-nahar.
Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein.